Welcome to the pilot episode of Read My Bitch, a new audio segment from Bitch Media. I'm Sherston Johnson, the web content manager. Read My Bitch features Bitch Magazine subscribers reading aloud one of their favorite articles from the archives and discussing it afterwards. For the first episode, Kristen Thiel of the Portland, Oregon publishing community will be reading Harriet and Claudia, Where Have You Gone? Notes from the Gender Divide in Literature by Monica T. Nolan, which appeared in the winter 2002 issue 15 of Bitch. Stay tuned after the program to find out how you can be on Read My Bitch. Here's Kristen.
When I was in fourth grade, my class was taken to see the film version of E.L. Konigsberg's 1967 novel From the Mixed-Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler. It was 1975. Somewhere in the middle of the movie, my teacher, Miss Calandra, the first woman I knew who went by Ms., leaned over and whispered, "Claudia reminds me of you." Of all the compliments I've received in my life, that one is probably meant the most. To be compared to the girl who runs away to New York to escape the boredom of suburban life. The girl who strategizes like Napoleon, whose grandiose plans meet with success, and who returns triumphantly home in a chauffeured limousine. My other role model was, of course, Harriet, from Harriet the Spy. Louise Fitzhugh, 1964. I can still remember the thrilling strangeness of first reading Harriet. Who was Old Golly? What was her relationship to Harriet? Why the funny name? Harriet was one of the first children's books I read that did not depict the kind of bland, leave-it-to-beaver socioeconomic niche that was supposed to be universal. The world it showed me was very different. A world that included nannies, cooks, exclusive private schools, and martini-drinking parents. With its portrait of a deeply urban, stringently unsentimental 11-year-old who seemed to have more in common with Truman Capote than with Ramona the Pest, Harriet paved the way for a new kind of children's book. Konigsberg's Mixed-Up Files came 3 years later, and 5 years after that saw the birth of two new classics. M.E. Kerr's Dinky Hawker Shoot Smack, and Norma Klein's Mom, the Wolfman, and Me. What I didn't realize when I first read these books was that I was extremely lucky. The 60s and 70s were to prove an exceptional time for girl bookworms like me, a time when female protagonists such as Harriet, Claudia, Dinky, and others like them led the charge for a new kind of a young adult fiction, replacing the insipid teen romances with stories that were sophisticated, complex, and smart. Today, the girl heroines who started the revolution in young adult literature have largely disappeared, and YA books have settled back into their earlier pattern. Publishing companies are happy to churn out formulaic books about girls, the best example being the Sweet Valley High series, which was introduced in the 1980s. But if girls want to read something better, such as the books that win the prestigious Newbery Medal or make the American Library Association's recommended list, they're going to be reading about boys. Before Harriet arrived in 1964, preteen girls who wanted to read about other girls were devouring horse stories, like Marguerite Henry's Misty of Chincoteague series, begun in 1947, and the Victorian fantasies of The Secret Garden, 1911, and A Little Princess, 1905. Later on, these girls might have read teen romances or, if they wanted something more action-oriented, the multi-volume adventures of Nurse Cherry Ames or Detective Nancy Drew, books that were originally published in the 1930s and 40s, but which continued to be reissued through the 60s and beyond. Although there were exceptions like A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, 1943, and To Kill a Mockingbird, 1950, both of which were popular with younger readers, despite being published in the adult division. The bulk of books about girls were produced from the same two or three molds. High school romances aimed at older teenage girls, a staple of the 50s and 60s, were especially convention-bound. 17th Summer, 1942, Maureen Daly's classic story of how Angie spends the titular summer dating Jack, set the pattern for this genre. "It's funny what a boy can do," the narrator muses early on. "One day you're nobody, and the next day you're the girl that some fellow goes with. Going with a boy gives you a new identity." This girl gets boy equals fulfillment formula was repeated ad nauseum. Yet it was almost never accompanied by any discussion of the sexual component of such a relationship. In fact, the physical side of adolescence was rarely addressed beyond the protagonist worrying about a pimple or two. In 1965, when Louise Fitzhugh wrote The Long Secret, her first sequel to Harriet, many adult readers were upset by the scene in which Harriet and her friends, Beth Ellen and Janie, discuss getting their periods. It's a toss-up whether the adults were more put off by Janie's matter-of-fact explanation of the menstrual cycle, or her distinct lack of enthusiasm for becoming a woman. Similarly, Norma Klein's Mom, the Wolfman, and Me was considered shocking in 1972. 11-year-old Brett's mother has never married and has a boyfriend sleepover. And Brett considers herself luckier than her friends who have normal families. Harriet, Mixed Up Files, Mom, and Dinky featured a refreshingly new kind of protagonist. A child or teenager who seemed to be suffering from world-weary ennui. In Mixed Up Files, she was bored with simply being straight A's Claudia Kincaid. She was tired of arguing about whose turn it was to choose the Sunday night 7:30 television show, of injustice, and of the monotony of everything. Their attitude toward adults is frequently one of humoring condescension. Really, Harriet thought. Adults are getting sillier every year. These new protagonists are private and sophisticated. Their interactions with their peers reflect the social complexity and heightened awareness of pecking order found in Jane Austen novels. They live in the real world, not in some hermetically sealed suburban bubble, as in Mom, the Wolfman, and Me. Mom had a big poster from her Women's Strike for Peace group, even though she wasn't marching with them. We were marching with a kind of anonymous group. These were characters written in the belief that children are fully formed people, not embryo humans. And of course, they were all girls. Louise Fitzhugh died in 1974, and Norma Klein in 1989. But M.E. Kerr and E.L. Konigsberg are still writing and still winning awards. Konigsberg won the 1997 Newbery for The View from Saturday. Their protagonists are still sophisticated, irreverent, and smart. Only now they're mostly boys. On the surface, the explanation seems simple. It has always been a golden rule of publishing that girls will read books about boys, but boys won't read books about girls. Girls have a long tradition of reading books about boys, partly because, until the 60s and 70s, books about girls lacked the variety and action of books about boys. The 1980 edition of the Teacher's Guide Literature for Today's Young Adults by Aline Pace Nilsen and Kenneth L. Donaldson reveals that even in 1920, one girl preferred Captain Courageous, the 1897 Rudyard Kipling story of a boy who stows away aboard a ship, to girls' books because it had so much more pep. The situation was the same 40 years later, when Essie Hinton was growing up. Reflecting on her teen reading, the author remembered, "I had read all the horse stories, and there wasn't anything else to read because I didn't want to read Jeannie Goes to the Prom." In the early 1960s, things began to change. As the repressiveness of the 50s started to crack, demands for realistic YA books, books where kids actually drank, smoke, and swore, like real kids, grew louder. Publishers had already noted the huge popularity of Catcher in the Rye's disaffected Holden Caulfield in 1951, and were cautiously beginning to provide more of the same. Soon, the previously buttoned-down field of YA lit became as wide open as a frontier town. And adventurous writers shot down one taboo after another, not only drinking, smoking, and disaffection, but premarital sex, divorce, drugs, death, and homosexuality. In addition to the sometimes sensational problem novels, realism meant non-white and non-middle-class characters, as well as non-stereotypical girls. Both the civil rights and women's lib movements reinforced this trend, creating a new demand for books about characters of different ethnicities, and about girls doing something aside from getting dates. It was this potent climate that produced Klein, Konigsberg, and Kerr, as well as a host of others, Joan Aiken, Judy Blume, Hilla Coleman, Paula Danziger, Bette Greene, Rosa Guy, Virginia Hamilton, Lois Lowry, Norma Fox Mazur, Betty Miles, and Mildred Taylor. Yet today, Although books about girls are presumably no longer bound by the limitations that existed up until the early 60s, the boys won't read girls' books rule holds true, producing, in a frustrating fashion, self-perpetuating limits on the publishing industry. The maxim put pressure on publishers to produce more books about boys than books about girls. The math is simple. Boys' books will be bought by both boys and girls, and girls' books will be bought by girls. Ergo, boys' books will make more money. In 1960, when Scott Odell wrote Island of the Blue Dolphins, he was asked to change the sex of the heroine, Karana, so that the book would reach a wider audience. Odell refused, arguing that his book was based on a true story. Blue Dolphins won the Newbery Medal in 1961. Who knows how many times this kind of pressure has been successfully exerted, turning a book about a girl, which may have interested boys as well, into a book about a boy. There are undoubtedly many more times when overt pressure is unnecessary. Writers can do the math themselves, or may even buy into the notion that because books about boys historically have been more interesting than books about girls, the interesting books must always be about boys. S.E. Hinton didn't even stop to consider girls as possible subjects when she wrote The Outsiders, published in 1967. In an interview many years later, she explained why she had always written in the voice of a boy, about boys. "I'm just more comfortable with that point of view. When I was young, girls never got to do anything. They got to rat their hair and outline their eyes black, but that was just about the extent of their activities." This was quoted in Jay Daly's 1987 overview of her work, presenting S.E. Hinton. Yet, paradoxically, it seems as if there's always someone complaining that there are no good books for boys. In the 50s, Beverly Cleary began writing the Henry Huggins series because she felt a need for something boys would like to read. "For as long as I can remember, there has been nothing in our public libraries for boys to read," wrote Canadian educator Ray Nicole in the March 1989 issue of School Library Journal. One of the reasons the Harry Potter series has been greeted with such acclaim is that it brought boys back to reading, as the New York Times put it in an article on the Potter craze. The last title genuinely popular with boys, as opposed to one foisted on them by adults, the article went on to say, was probably Hatchet, Gary Paulsen's realistic 1987 novel about a boy stranded for 54 days in the Canadian wilderness. So, on one hand, we have award-winning writers succumbing to the pressure to write books about boys rather than girls, and, on the other hand, we have the widespread perception that a good boys' book comes just once a decade. What's really going on here? The 60s and 70s seemed like the beginning of a brave new world. But in retrospect, those years were an anomaly. The gain of strong girl protagonists, whose appearance was fueled by the heady days of women's lib and facilitated by the trend toward realism, has dwindled away, for the same reasons that Bridget Jones' Diary has replaced Fear of Flying on 20-something women's shelves. Today, good books with girl protagonists are still being published. The Weetsy Bat series by Francesca Leah Block and Cynthia Voigt's Dicey Tillerman books come to mind. But they are the exception, not the rule. Don't get me wrong, The View from Saturday is a fine book, and I love Kerr's Fell series. The first was published in 1987. I can't say I would want them unwritten. At the very least, Königsberg and Kerr are giving their readers a taste of a more sophisticated narrative, one that goes beyond the simple first-person narrator equals reader identification equation that has long been a staple of YA lit. But is a sidekick a substitute for a heroine? Girl readers deserve more. Like the publishing industry, this article has been hijacked by boys and their needs. I don't really care much if the guys never learn to enjoy Harriet, Claudia, and Dinky. I'm more concerned about the girls who are being denied new heroines, who will grow up thinking, as S.E. Hinton did, that girls are limited to applying makeup, while boys get to do the really fun stuff. I'm wondering what experiences female authors are carefully translating into boys' stories, which will then forever be regarded as boys' experiences. Louise Fitzhugh's last book was Sport, 1979, about one of Harriet's two closest friends. The boy, of course. But what about Harriet's other friend? What about Janie?
With me today is Kristen Thiel.
Hi, I'm a writer and editor here in Portland.
But how long have you been a reader of Bitch?
Oh, gosh. A coworker, I would say, oh, maybe like 8 or so years ago, first introduced me to Bitch.
Cool. And you picked today the article, Harriet and Claudia, Where Have You Gone? Notes on the Gender Divide in Children's Literature, which is by Monica T. Nolan and was published in an issue of Bitch that was 8 years ago.
It was, yeah. This might have been one of my first articles that I read.
Well, I thought that was great that this article stood out to you, even though it was from 8 years ago. And do you want to talk about why it did that?
Well, I think, not only for my current profession that I work in words still today, but as a child, for seeing Harriet as the first title of the first word of the title, I loved Harriet the Spy as a kid. So as a kid, I was always reading when I was brushing my teeth, when I was walking, everything. And not only do YA books have a special place in my heart personally, but then now as an adult and viewing them from, a somewhat critical lens, critical in both a good and negative sense, that I thought this article was a good. Some good commentary on that.
Cool. And you do work in the publishing industry, so I was wondering what your take on is if things have changed in the past 8 years, or if it sort of still holds true about the way books are published today for children.
Right. That's a good question. The first thought that came to my mind when I was thinking about this, because I had a feeling we would talk something along these lines, but I just started reading the new trilogy, the Hunger Games trilogy, and that has a female narrator. She is 16 or so. And these are YA books. And she is, I think overall it's really good. She's a strong character in a very adventure series. And her sidekick is a boy, actually. And she, a lot of times they sort of save each other, which I think is a nice balance. But I would say overall, she's the one who, she certainly doesn't need saving from him or by him. So that's of course just one example, but and that's getting a lot of press. It's sort of getting, well, not quite Harry Potter like press, but that kind of everyone's very excited about the series, so that's cool. Overall though, I think it's always a struggle, even in the sense that definitely, even if you can say that there are now strong girl heroines and way more than ever before, it's still all the romance books and makeup books and that kind of thing feature girls. There is no equivalent for boys. So girls continue to hold strongly that niche of fiction. And so I think it's really easy for girls to still see those books as the main focus. And like, well, there are still books out there telling us that this is how girls are supposed to be. And I mean, in fact, they're reissuing Sweet Valley High
Oh yeah, I think I saw
right
that.
now. Oh, the Babysitter's
Yes,
Club.
yes, yeah.
Yes. Which I didn't really read either of those
I
series as a
read
kid.
the Babysitter's Club, and
Was
it's interesting. I'm trying to think
it
how
more
it
sort of
influenced me.
business oriented
I mean, I guess
or
it was
like
cool that they like took the initiative to
right?
like organize themselves as babysitters, and they each had like their own personality, I guess. Maybe some of them blander than others. I mean, it was like a series. One book was like the other.
Yes. Which is going to be the problem with
And
all.
I guess I was, at least I was reading,
Right. That's true. That's true.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. I was interested to see how they would modernize them, or like how the books would look different, and if they would emulate maybe like the Gossip Girl covers and
Right.
stuff.
The very little bit that I've heard, which didn't discuss the covers, which I think is a great point, that they were saying in comparing the two, the Sweet Valley High books. I heard a bit of outrage because the girls in the original book, their description that you got every book was something like, Jessica and Elizabeth have blonde hair and drive this cool car and are a perfect size 6, I think it was. Uh-huh. And now they're a perfect size 4.
Oh.
Or it might have been 4 and 2 even.
Right.
So they've gone down a size because, you know, 6 or 4 is not small enough.
Right.
And I did hear with the Babysitter's Club, it didn't seem to be revamped in quite that way. They were doing things like, you know, of course the girls were very excited about getting a perm in their hair, which no one does that anymore. So they've simply changed it to, you know, we're excited to get an expensive hairdo or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask if you mentioned the Hunger Games, but mm-hmm. if you did know other YA novels with, like, Harriet the Spy type heroines, right, or just, like, strong characters that mm-hmm. happen to be women or girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should have thought about that. I'm totally drawing a blank. The Hunger Games ones I've read recently, which is, and I really enjoyed them, so they stick. It's nice. I mean, they mentioned it in the article that a couple of the books, the older books, were sold or published by the adult division, but yet still had a big YA following in purchasing and reading. And that was interesting for me to learn that there was an element of that many decades ago, because certainly there's a lot of crossover now. People talk about it, or maybe even they're more conscious of it, like, is this book an actual, is it YA or adult? And does it matter in the sense that we can still get crossover? Mm-hmm. For example, The Hunger Games, I know a lot of, I don't know any kids. And so the people I know who are telling me about it are adults, saying that it's a really interesting series. So I guess maybe what I'm saying too is that in part because of our society, which is far from perfect, of course, but more advanced from the early 60s, that there might be more parents willing to let their kids read adult books. There's less of that taboo, like, mm-hmm. ooh, what will they find out? And so that's nice, too. I wonder if kids today are feeling a little more free and able and getting recommendations from librarians to adult books that have strong female characters. Right. So maybe there's a little more room there, too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just a YA book. I thought of another book, another YA book that I just got. Actually, my sweetie bought it for me. You know, he's very aware of my love of reading and how, like, crazed for it I was, especially as a child. And so then when this book is called Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie, and it is, well, actually, I don't know if it was published as an adult or YA, but I think it's being marketed as YA. Protagonist is 11, I think, and she solves a mystery. She's rather Harriet the Spy-ish, but then also she studies science. Her house happens to have a lab in it, and so if it's not technically YA, it still works for kids, and that's another good one. Cool. Out recently. I guess maybe in part I look for those books, consciously or unconsciously, so I'm trying to even think of, like, what's a good YA book that I've read that has a strong male character in it. If I'm looking up what the book is about and it's got a girl character, yeah, that's kind of another added little
you
plus.
You gravitate, like, towards mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And of course, those are the kinds of books that you want out there, even if the boys and the girls even are not reading, to have, like, a strong presence like Harriet out there as the sort of floating out there in the ether is mm-hmm. kind of nice. Like, I'd rather have that sort of soak into people by osmosis, even if they're not reading mm-hmm. it.
Knowing it's there.
Right. Because, yeah. I mean, right now, you know, even if you don't watch Gossip Girl, I mean, I'm imagining kids are like, they know Gossip Girl
yes.
exists, right? So you, and if that image comes to them, I'm assuming rather readily, because mm-hmm. it's part of the big culture. Mm-hmm. So what if, you know, Harriet the Spy was just part of that generic culture, mm-hmm. regardless of whether or not you were or any attention, direct attention.
Sort of like Judy Blume, like the Judy Blume sphere, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
At least there's her. And
right.
The article wrapped up by saying, sort of, even though writers and publishers have this market of young boys in mind, that boys aren't reading anyway because reading is sort of culturally considered, you know, girly. So I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
That's certainly been a longstanding comment. And, you know, this article was written after Harry Potter, so she mentions that in there, like, it's not only getting kids reading, but boys reading. And I'm not entirely sure that it's, the shorter answer is, I don't know.
Because I feel like if it is true, it's sort of like a lose-lose situation, because we are lacking these books that are supposedly, you know, if it has a girl, it's supposedly not going to be read by men. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if boys aren't reading anyway, it sounds like no one ends up winning. And
Right. Yeah, exactly. I suppose you could look at it the other way then, that if boys aren't reading, then why not publish books with strong female characters?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a win situation in that way.
Thanks for listening to Read My Bitch. Is there a certain bitch article that means a lot to you? Do you want to share it with others? Email me at online@bword.org. That's O-N-L-I-N-E at b-word.org. Unfortunately, audio recording will be necessary for submissions outside of Portland, Oregon, so please include your experience with digital recording in your email. As always, you can listen to other Bitch Media audio segments like Papaganda and the Issue podcast on iTunes or at bitchmedia.org/audio. Thanks again for listening!